We have made the calls, and we're joined here in Jefferson City by three farmers who I'm going to introduce in a minute, and they'll talk a little bit about their situation. And then after they are through, we've got several experts on various topics I think will be interesting to you all. We're obviously some preventive planning decisions still to be made. I'm sure many of you have already made those decisions. Also, new information today on the trade mitigation package and the disaster bill. So we'll talk about all those things, perhaps a little bit of the agronomic questions that you all are facing on your farms as far as replanting and flood damage and flood moisture damaged crops. So a lot of stuff to cover in the next few minutes. We have Jason Kurtz. Jason's a farmer from up at Oregon, Missouri. We try to get three farmers kind of across the state to give a little bit of representation of what's going on in different parts of Missouri. Jason, what's going on in your farm in Oregon, Missouri, which is Holt County, Northwest Missouri?
Well, right now we are trying to finish up planting. About a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, we received 6.5 to 7 inches of rain in about 4 hours. That put us extremely behind the eight ball, per se. We were finished up planting corn. I guess before I go into all that, we farm all in the hills. I farm right up to the Missouri River Bluffs. I have many friends and neighbors that are completely underwater. In Holt County, there's 95,000 acres that are underwater, have water on it in some shape or form, that will not be planted. So that decision's pretty much made up for those farmers. We did get to almost finish with soybeans, as it was, we are all in the hills, so we were subject to the erosion of the femoral gullies. That has been declared to where that will be waived this year, which is a extremely big help because those fields have been planted and there's no way that I was going to be able to go in and get them fixed and mended and terraces cleaned out and everything and put back the way that they're supposed to be.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Andy Clay farms in Montauk County. He is in the middle of the mess with the Missouri River. So what's going on your farm, Andy?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Blake. And like you said, we are in the middle of it. We farm right on the Missouri River in Montauk and in Cooper County. Unfortunately, lost one levee there along I-70. And then the other one, somehow we saved the levee, but the bottom is full. It looks like it's been broke. So we're pretty much out of commission in both bottoms with the river remaining high for the foreseeable future and then some. Same way farming along the creek bottoms in our area, close to the Missouri River. We unfortunately are still seeing high backwater. So even a lot of the ground along the creeks still have yet to even be replanted or even thought about replanted as they're still underwater as it slowly resides. Unfortunately, in the river bottom, I mean, it's all going to be prevent planted acres. So looking for a lot of clarification and different routes that we can be taking on the cover crop programs and then cleaning up debris and just unfortunately a lot of unknown yet to be determined.
Guys, in either one of your areas, are people still trying to plant corn that they can prevent planting? How are they making that decision on land they intended to go to corn?
Personally, I think the majority of the people in my area that can plant corn are planting corn. I know there are a few beginner farmers that are taking the prevent planting route, but anyone that can get over the ground is still planting.
Same way in our area. I have a friend that was still planting corn 2 days ago, so they're still trying to plant.
All right, so we've got, later on, we've got three different economists on the call. So with any luck at all, we should be able to get at least four different opinions on preventive planning and how that works with the trade mitigation package and the disaster bill. But before we do that, let's talk about the Boot Heel, about how things are going in southeast Missouri. We have Barry Bean, who farms, amongst other things, a lot of cotton, so a little bit different perspective, perhaps. Barry, what's happening in the Boot Heel?
Well, fortunately, we have escaped the worst of the flooding that y'all have seen up north. The river is up in Cape Girardeau and Perry counties. The river's pretty high, and the bottomlands are underwater. We are seeing some seep water along the levees, but for most of southeast Missouri, and certainly on our farm, the flooding that we're seeing is what we would consider normal flooding, the flooding that we see in 1 year out of every four or five. The problem that we have had is it's been a cool and wet enough year that we are dramatically behind on planting. We've probably, statewide, we've lost about 20% of our cotton acres and about 30% of our rice acres. The corn, we generally got in. We got in 90-95% of the corn. It's coming along okay, but our cotton is easily 20 to 25 days behind schedule. A lot of that still looks pretty iffy. If we don't have a perfect June, then we're going to be looking at cotton acres that just aren't going to make it. And rice is struggling. It's overall in fair condition, but there's an awful lot of spots struggling. But we're still looking at, there's an awful lot of ground out there that has been either, well, it's consistently been wet since mid-April, and we're at a little bit of a loss. We're looking at MFP and PP and trying to figure out the impact on our APH to figure out how to go forward on those acres.
Okay, so what are a lot of people taking preventive planting? First off, how many growing degree days are you behind? And I know Dr. Bradley may be able to answer that as well, but, you know, down there, how much are you behind?
Well, I don't want to, I haven't actually looked at the growing degree days. I know that looking when I'm out in the field looking at cotton right now, it's where I would really like to see cotton on about May the 15th. So we are well behind. We've got an awful lot of young and tender cotton out there. That, as I say, if we have a perfect June and July, this cotton will come out of it, and there's no reason we shouldn't make a 5-year average. But a lot of it has been replanted two or three times. It's running very late. So any kind of stress that it goes under in the next 60 days or so, and we'll be looking at it either lower yield or some micronaire issues.
All righty. Thank you, Barry. We're joined by Dr. John Newton, who's the Chief Economist for American Farm Bureau. Again, we do have a couple of economists on the call as well, an agronomist. We're looking forward to what they all have to say. But I did have a chance to kind of ask Dr. Newton if he'd talk a little bit. There's some major announcements made today by the Secretary about the disaster program and the market facilitation program. What's up, John?
Well, can you hear me okay?
Sure can, or we can't hear.
Oh, good deal. Well, we sent a letter to the Secretary about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, Mr. Hurst, really reflecting a lot of the comments that I had heard from you as well as many of the other State Farm Bureau presidents with respect to the confusion around the MFP payment and the potential disaster aid at that point in time. It hadn't yet been passed out of the House. And the Secretary today, kind of in response to that letter, Zippy, President Duvall, also had an opportunity to ride with the Secretary last week to a meeting and reiterated some of the concerns that we surfaced in that letter. And so what USDA did today is they released a fact sheet, an FAQ, on a number of the questions that people had with respect to the MFP payment as well as the disaster aid. I did send you, Spencer, and Eric a copy of that FAQ, but if I have time, I'd love to run through some of the things that he highlighted. Would that be okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Please
so
do.
The first the first thing was, what's the purpose of the MFP program? What's the legal authority? I think we all know that that's the CCC corporation. The monies there are able to be used to help farmers market a crop. Now, the second question really was geared around the fact that last year soybeans had the highest per acre payment on the MFP program payments, and the question of whether I should plant soybeans again this year in order to maximize potential payments. I haven't really heard that from many of our state farm bureaus, that notion, but they did say that you should plant what works for your operation, and that the payment rates, the MFP payment rates, the second round, will be made on a county level, average payment per county, so it doesn't really reflect what crops you plant in 2019. The MFP program simply requires you to plant a crop in 2019, and your payments in 2019 will be based on the crops that you plant. We did ask the secretary to make prevent plant eligible for trade aid payments. Our logic there was that the revenue guarantee under crop insurance was lower because of the trade situation. As such, the payment from a prevent plant claim was also lower, but the secretary and the lawyers felt that you couldn't make a MFP payment on prevent plant because it has to be for a crop that's marketed. So what USDA has said is that they could potentially make a bonus prevent plant payment under the trade aid package based on any cover crops that may be planted in 2019. So we don't have a lot of details yet on what that includes. I'll be sure to communicate, Mr. Hurst, that you want that to include pigweed.
There you go. That's what we're growing.
So we'll get some more details there. It did list all the crops that are eligible, including the specialty crops. But a lot of the crops that are eligible for the trade aid include a lot of your Title I covered commodities, and then as well as alfalfa. The third fact here, it says, my field's never dried out enough to get a crop in. Do I get a trade aid payment? It says, no, USDA does not have the legal authority to make a trade aid payment. Producers unable to plant their crops should work with their crop insurance agent to file a claim. Fourth here, it says, I filed a prevent planting claim. I'm going to plant a cover crop to prevent erosion. Does that count for MFP? And it says, if you choose to plant a cover crop with the potential to be harvested because of this year's adverse weather conditions, you may qualify for a minimal amount of trade assistance payments. So, again, we'll continue to work with the department to get more details on that. And as soon as we get any additional details, we'll be sure to share it with all the State Farm Bureau so they're well aware of what information we're hearing from the department there. I think one of the biggest things that we've been hearing over the last 2 weeks is that prevent plant could potentially pay up to 90% of the value of the crop. And so this is something that we specifically asked, President Duvall asked the secretary to clarify when they had the car ride together last week. And here the FAQ says, I heard I can get 90% of my crop insurance guarantee as a prevent plant payment through the disaster bill. Is that true? And so what they recognize is that the Disaster Relief Act gives USDA the authority to compensate losses up to 90% of the value of the crop. They say while that authority exists, USDA must operate within finite appropriation limits. And they were appropriated a little more than $5.2 billion in this disaster package, and only about $3 billion of that is for farm-related disasters. And as a sidebar, we've been working on this disaster package for several months here in Washington, and the dollar figure has consistently been $3 billion, I think going back to February or March when we were negotiating this. So that $3 billion has remained the same, but at this point now they've added prevent plant as an eligible disaster. So the money is going to be spread pretty thin there, and I think that's what USDA is trying to highlight. Here it says, if I plant a second or cover crop, can I still get prevent plant? What about a trade aid payment? You have to comply with crop insurance to get a prevent plant indemnity, and then they encourage you to visit with your crop insurance agent. If you plant a cover crop that can be harvested, you could potentially get a trade aid payment there. Another one that was surfaced around the country was whether or not to get disaster assistance, you had to be in a federal or state declared disaster area. And so it says here, I've heard that only acreage in a declared disaster area will qualify for prevent planting under the Disaster Relief Act. Is that true? USDA is currently evaluating the authority provided under the Disaster Relief Act. However, it's generally true that producers with qualifying losses in a secretarial or presidentially declared disaster area will be eligible for disaster relief assistance. So anybody outside of those areas, the eligibility will be determined on a case-by-case basis. And so I'm not sure yet, and I don't think a lot of folks understand yet what exactly that means. Is it USDA has to declare it a disaster area? Does it need to be FEMA or a state governor? But given that the monies are pretty thin to begin with, I would imagine that's one of the mechanisms they'll use to make sure anybody getting some of these additional prevent plant payments are in some of those disaster areas. Here's one about the harvest price option. The disaster bill does say that any losses should be calculated based on the higher of the spring or harvest price. We echoed that in our letter as well. And it says here that the USDA is exploring their authority to do that with respect to prevent plant. One of the other issues that we surfaced, especially for folks raising livestock, was the ability to plant on prevent plant ground and be able to harvest before November 1st so they can hay or graze or use it as forage or silage without any penalty in prevent plant payment or date restriction penalties. And says USDA is encouraging folks to work with their crop insurance agents. I know that we've echoed that a number of times to the secretary. A bill was just released today in the House that would permanently modify crop insurance to allow farmers on prevent plant to plant a crop for forage or silage without any type of payment or deadline date restrictions. So that's something I think USDA is very well aware of and will get a fix pretty soon. So with that, I think that really highlights the FAQs. Mr. Hurst, is there anything else that you think would be useful that I could provide to the group?
Well, John, I think we've got a couple of other speakers. We'll see what they have to say, and then we'll open it up. I know that Andy and Jason will have some questions, and so is I as well. So you'll be able to be with us for a few more minutes.
Yeah, the only, and I'm sure everybody on the phone will appreciate this. My daughter's down at the swimming pool, so she's waiting on Daddy to finish the call so I can come down to the pool with her.
All right, we'll try to get you there as quick as we can. Dr. Scott Brown, the Director of Strategic Partnerships, is with us. And Scott, you and I think I bored you for about half an afternoon last week. A lot of questions answered by the Secretary today. But I'm still not sure my concern was answered, which is the fact that we were in a competition for acres between prevented planting and soybeans. Has he changed people's decision anyway as they try to decide whether to take prevented planting on corn or to plant soybeans? Has he made a difference?
Well, I think, Blake, we still have a lot of uncertainty out there when it comes to the right decision. It's nice to see the FAQs up there. There's still a lot of yet-to-be-determined details that I think are going to be important as folks try to make that decision. I guess to take a little different spin today with USDA now releasing their June WASDE report, it reminded me to make sure we had the discussion of corn versus soybean markets as folks think about the decisions they have to make. USDA knocked 10 bushels off the U.S. corn yield in the June report relative to May. Also knocked down planted acres by 3 million acres relative to where they were in May. That combination got us a 13.7 billion bushel corn crop harvested this fall versus what was a 15 billion bushel crop in the May report. If you now look at ending stocks, so in May, USDA was suggesting ending stocks of almost 2.5 billion bushels of corn. They've trimmed those now to 1.7 roughly billion bushels of corn and raised their corn projection by 50 cents. So we got a 380 season average price for corn. Just reminds me that we're getting a big change in USDA's monthly report early in the process, as they already see the issues of delayed planting. I think there's going to remain a lot of uncertainty about what the final yield looks like when we see the corn side, just given how tough some of the corn still looks that's been planted. A lot will argue that there's going to be even less than the even a greater decline than the 3 million acres USDA put in the report today. We'll wait for that June acreage report here at the end of June. That still may not give us a very good picture, given so much was still going on at the time that survey would have went out to producers. Yet when you look at the other side of the picture, USDA also gave us their outlook for soybeans with no change in soybean production on their part yet, saying it's really too early in the process, so a 49.5 bushel yield to be harvested this fall, according to USDA, and still an area planted of 84.6. I look at the soybean side, and the thing that sticks out to me is that USDA, for the current year we're in, the 18-19 year, now saying we're having ending stocks above a billion bushels. And when you look at their projections for the crop we harvest this fall, still above a billion bushels of soybeans. So interesting market dynamics between corn and soybean prices that I think also have to factor in to the decision that producers have to make. I wish I could help folks on the call with having a completely clear crystal ball to tell you where these prices are going. But I guess in my mind there's still some upside potential in corn and in some ways maybe some downside risk in soybeans.
So corn and soybeans both in the fives, is that what you're saying?
They sure get a lot closer together than we would have ever thought. And I think, again, folks have to think about just the opposite directions we seem to be moving at this point.
All right. Thank you, Scott. Dr. Raymond Massey is with us, an extension economist, did a great sort of overview of the markets and the trade situation. Dr. Massey, how does this all play in trade? What's going to happen?
Well, what I'm thinking about just after what Scott Brown said is if, in fact, corn prices are going up, one of the things you need to be aware of is if you take the prevented planting option, which a lot of folks are planning on doing, you are locking in that springtime price for corn, which is $4. If somehow you are able to get the corn in and there is a rally in corn and you're taking revenue insurance, I should say that, revenue protection, you may be able to grab a little bit extra price protection with your crop insurance. But the thing that I'd really say is critical at this point, where we're at in late planting period and everything, is you've got to communicate with your crop insurance agent before you do anything. I think you have 72 hours after the end of the late planting period, which has already occurred for extreme southeast and southwest Missouri, but for the rest of the state, that'll happen either this weekend or sometime later next week, depending on where you're at in the state. So you're going to have to make some kind of a declaration as to what you're going to do. But again, talking about your agronomy or your agronomic issues, if you can, I would not take anything off the table right now. Late planted corn that may be harvested as silage, again, going back to what somebody else said. Switching to something like Sudan, you may not be able to plant or harvest it as a silage until November 1st, but if you plant corn late and then find out that you've got a poor yield, you can harvest that as silage and it'd still be an insured crop. But before you do that, talk to your crop insurance agent. Essentially, don't make any decisions without first clearing it with them, because you'd hate to be bumped out because of some type of a technicality. There is a spreadsheet that I have on the extension website, which I think you're going to make available to people in an email tomorrow. So that'll help them look at what the options are. It does have in there the University of Missouri expected decrease in harvest. So, you know, if you say you're going to plant it June the 12th to the 15th, it will say, well, you're only going to get 70 or 80% of your expected harvest if you had done a timely planting. And that's just University of Missouri equations. But it also brings it through the crop insurance issues of what percentage of coverage do you have, when are you going to get that payment, and things of that nature.
All right. Thank you a lot. So we also are joined by Dr. Bradley, who's going to talk a little bit about sort of the agronomic challenges we're facing. I got corn in the same field that's yellow and 4 inches tall and green and 2 feet tall or 18 inches tall. What's that going to mean to my yields?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be all over the board, but I think as Bill Wiebold and Greg Luce, our agronomist here at MU, they wrote an article lately that said something to the effect of, you know, poor corn is better than no corn at all this year, and there's a lot of people in that situation. So all of our corn across Missouri is in a danger zone, if you will, for having nitrogen lost or having nitrogen need. So we're kind of all over the board with regard to that. I guess the few things I would just add to what's been mentioned from an agronomic standpoint, the number one question I've been getting asked is mostly about the herbicides that are on the ground that was flooded out. And, you know, there's not much I can tell you there that's good news. Almost no corn herbicide, if you look at the label for the replant interval, will allow you to plant soybeans or, for that matter, just about any cover crop. These are residual herbicides by nature. That you want them to last in the soil for weed control, obviously. And so that's generally why the companies are kind of covering themselves in a lot of ways. Those tests haven't been conducted that need to be conducted to get those things approved on the label. Now, having said that, the number one question, like I said, I get is basically, can I plant a cover crop? Can I plant a soybean? I've got atrazine down, all that kind of stuff. I can't tell you you can do that, but I would say and what I have been saying a lot on the phone the past couple of weeks is one thing we would suggest is a soil bioassay. And that sounds like it's something fancy. It's really not. All we're saying is take some of the soil from the flooded field, plant it in some cups or pots or whatever, or some people just take a little corner of the field that's dried out and hoe in some soybeans or something or whatever it is you're trying to plant. But I'd rather see it in a little pot kind of experiment. Go to another area where you know there's no problem, there hasn't been any herbicide, get some soil from that area, plant your crop out that you're wanting to plant in there, and then just watch and wait. It'd only take a week or so, and you'll know for sure if that soybean or maybe it's cereal rye you want to plant or whatever it is, if that's going to be all right and not suffer any damage due to herbicide residues. You know, real world, if it's just atrazine that's been applied, it's probably gone. I can't tell you that for sure, but the real world thing is most people don't just apply atrazine. There's two or three-way pre-herbicide combinations. And that means two or three active ingredients. They all don't break down the same. They all aren't degraded the same. And so that's where we get into a much riskier situation of if you're going to plant something in there, it could actually hurt your subsequent crops. So that's probably the number one thing that I've been answering calls about. But if there's any calls here as we finish up and proceed, if there's any questions, I'd be glad to take those also.
Well, I think that's a pretty you know, I appreciate everybody that's been on the call. A great job of covering some of these issues. We've got Barry on the phone, Andy and Jason here in the room with us. What questions came up in you guys' mind? What did you, what did our presenters say that made you think or gave you a question, something that you're concerned about?
Okay, go ahead, Barry. I'll jump in here. One thing worth a question that I have is on prevented plant. I know that they are looking at the possibility of possibly increasing the payment rate on that. Has there been any talk about the impact of prevented plant on the APH and your program yield on any given farm?
Maybe I can talk to that just a little bit, but if you actually do take prevented planting, meaning you do not plant a crop on it, you let it lay idle, or you plant a cover crop on it, there is nothing that will happen to your APH. They'll just put in a not planted for 2019, so it won't hurt your APH. If, on the other hand, you do plant something either late or you plant soybeans on it, the corn yield that you would have had will affect your APH, and so that is one thing you need to look at: is how does your planting decision affect APH? Prevented planting does not affect it at all.
Okay, well, I had understood that differently in previous years. Did that change in the current farm bill, or did I misunderstand that previously?
I don't think that's new. Again, if you do not plant, it will not be counted against you, so you're not going to get a zero yield. But if you do plant, there will be, and you get a low yield, that will be used in your APH.
Yeah, good to know. Good to know. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ray. All right, guys. Andy's got a question.
Yeah, well, the question here, and it's probably more for an RMA, but I was hoping you all might have better insight on it than myself. On preventive plant acres, if we choose to do a cover crop and harvest that cover crop, do you all know, can it be chopped for silage or just baled? We're getting mixed information, kind of the clarification we had that was chopping it for silage is a mechanical harvest and was not allowed.
Blake, if I could chime in, this is John.
Yeah, John.
I was just going to say this is an issue that we've surfaced up and down, left and right with the secretary. I've been on the communication with Rob Johansson, chief economist at USDA, also the chairman of the Federal Crop Insurance Corporation on this issue. There's also a bill moving through the House on this issue, and USDA's communicated that they're very, very well aware of this, and they are going to try to be as flexible as possible on this. Last week I was visiting with Senator Thune's office, and they said that while they don't have any language yet for USDA, they've been assured by the department how much they recognize that this is an issue and will try to find a way to make sure that all of the issues with respect to, chopping, growing in silage, forage, et cetera, are addressed on crops that are put on prevent plant. I think the winter kill in the upper Midwest only makes this issue even more dire. So they're very, very well aware of it, and it was number two on our list for President Zippy Duval to raise to the secretary last week when they were together. So I think that USDA is going to come through on this. I just think that we need to give them a little bit more time. And if there's something that we're missing and they don't capture, we'll be sure to reiterate and re-clarify what exactly we need.
Was there somebody else that had a comment on that question?
This is Ray Massey. I can give you what the current rules are. Again, whether they get changed because of what they're talking about, that may happen. But there's three words that they used when you're planting a cover crop, and that's harvested, hayed, or grazed. And so if it is harvested, you're not going to get a prevented planting payment. If it is hayed or grazed before November 1st and you planted it before the end of the late planting period, which again, the late planting period for most of Missouri has not ended except for the extreme southeast and southwest. But if you hay or graze it after November 1st, you get a complete planting payment. But if you wait until the late planting period is over, you can hay or graze it before November 1st and get 35% of your late planting period, or not, I'm sorry, 35% of your prevented planting payment. So it's kind of treated like a second crop. Or you can hay or graze it after November 1st and get all of your prevented planting. So November 1st is the key date right now under the current provisions of your crop insurance program.
Yes, sir, but what, and sorry if I missed it, but chopping silage, that you're saying haying or grazing, so correct me if I'm wrong, chopping silage even after the 1st of November is not allowed, correct, under the current state?
Well, again, this is where you're going to want to talk to your crop insurance agent. Is it going to be considered a second crop, or is it going to be considered a cover crop? If you can justify it as a cover crop, after November 1st, if you harvest it, which at that time most of it is going to be somewhat dry, and I don't know how well it ensiles, but if it is indeed considered a cover crop by insurance, and you harvest it, not harvest, hay or graze after November 1st, you get 100% of your prevented planting payment. So I'd ask your insurance agent, are you going to consider this a prevented or a cover crop or a second crop?
Yes, sir. My example was if one was taking preventive planting and then doing a cover crop, would they be able to chop that cover crop after November 1st for silage, or can it only be grazed or baled, like it says?
I'm aware of this issue. This is something that Vice President Scott VanderWaal, he elevated this issue, and this is, again, something we've communicated that the issue with respect to, you know, chopping it, and I anticipate USDA is going to try to give as much flexibility as they can on this. But we continue to raise that issue with the department.
All right. Did you have another question, Andy?
Yeah, I guess one more for Dr. Newton. You can probably answer this as well. What's the chances USDA is going to move that November 1st date up for a wheat crop? Have you heard any talk
about
that?
That I'm not sure.
Like, October 15th or something, so you take the cover crop off so you can get a wheat crop in still?
We've specifically been asking on just the, you know, the perspective of livestock and silage and grazing, and we also asked to have emergency grazing on CRP ground. But I think if there's any issue that we need to flag additionally to the FCIC board or to the secretary, we can do so. So I can reach out to Spencer tomorrow to get a little bit more clarity and send a note in if there's something else we need to communicate. Is that okay, Mr. Hurst?
Yeah, that would be great, because what Andy's saying is he wants to take it off a little quicker so he's still got time to seed weed because of the Hessian free fly date and all that.
And what we've asked is to have no date restrictions and then no penalty either. We were just talking about a prevent plan dropping to 35%. We didn't want that. I think President Holt from Wisconsin was concerned that, you know, if his neighbors want to plant something on his prevent plant for their dairy cattle, he'd let them do that, but not if it's going to mean he's going to get docked on his prevent plant payment. So, you know, I think USDA recognizes that, you know, if you want to plant something for, quote-unquote, donation or something like that. So we continue to communicate all the unique scenarios that seem to emerge here. And again, if there's something specifically here with respect to make sure you can get weed in, we can do that.
Barry, you have any other questions?
No, we've done a pretty good job of covering my questions. Other than just to confirm now, where will we post on our website URLs to the FAQ posted by the USDA and the other documents that we've referred to in this conversation?
Yes, we will. We'll get Dr. Massey's spreadsheet up. We'll get the secretary's frequently asked questions. We'll also get a recording of this phone call for people who had to leave during the phone call or would like to share it with friends or whatever. So we'll try to get that all up on the web in the next few hours tomorrow. Thank you, everybody, that participated. Just a tremendous job of answering questions. John, get down to the swimming pool. You need to get yourself wet. And
or come to Missouri.
Yeah, there you go. Come to Missouri. We got lots of swimming pools here. All right.
I was just in Indiana and Chicago. It was pretty wet there.
Yeah, it's wet everywhere. Scott, Ray, and Kevin, thanks. Great job. Exactly what we'd hoped to accomplish, I think. And sunny here today. Chance of rain tonight. We hope we get a few more days of good weather for the next rain. Thank you all very much. And thanks to everybody that dialed in.